This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents Darkness Visible, written by Arvind Ethan David, performed by Christian McKay, Miranda Richardson, Adam Campbell, Samuel Barnett, Kirsty Yates, and Joe Spano.
Out from the hell that is Dunkirk, out from under the crushing boot that is the German war machine, comes the British Expeditionary Force. They are worn out and battle-scarred, they are hungry and they are tired, but they are not defeated. For weeks they have been shelled at from three sides, huddled on the beach, cut off from home. But for what has been done in the last 3 days, these men are grateful. To the men of the merchant service and to the tiny boats, many of them volunteer civilian vessels, plowing between the big ships and the shore. At the end, more than 300,000 men, four-fifths of the BEF, have been brought back safe. A remarkable triumph snatched by the ingenuity and bravery of the ordinary British people.
Turn it off. Turn the bloody thing off.
Sir?
They have been shown.
Prime Minister?
What?
Was the projector not working properly, Mr. Churchill?
Well, it's not working at all now. Take a note. This was no triumph. At best, a salvation. No. Strike that. A deliverance. Wars are not won by retreat. No. Wars are not won by evacuation. What has happened in France and Belgium is a colossal military disaster. We are told that Herr Hitler has a plan for invading the British Isles. You get that?
Herr Hitler has a plan for invading the British Isles, yes, sir. Does he? Hitler, I mean.
Assuredly. Very hot on his plans, Herr Hitler. Now get the typewriter, Lizzie. You know I detest shorthand. Quickly now. A letter to Franklin D. Roosevelt, President of the United States of America. Mr. President, the voice and force of the United States may count for nothing if they are withheld too long. The moment to act is now. If you wait, you may have a completely subjugated Europe established with astonishing swiftness. And the weight of that may be more than we can bear.
Sir?
Mr. President, we need destroyers. 40 or 50 at least. We need hundreds of the latest type of aircraft. We need anti-aircraft guns and ammunition. We need more of every manner of war machinery. On air, on land, in the sea. We are outmanned, outnumbered, outgunned. Confound it! Why can't you see it? The moment to act is now.
I think you said that a bit earlier.
And I've got to bloody well keep saying it. Now. Now. I need boats now, and planes now, soldiers and steel now. I cannot win this war with words alone. However much your typing renders my words into the banging of a howitzer. Damn it, Lizzie.
Sorry, sir.
Come.
Morning, Prime Minister.
What is it, Brookie? Who's this?
Roberts here is a dispatch rider, one of our fastest and most reliable military couriers.
Hey, Donar, eh? Good lad. Important work. Why is he here?
Last night, he was given a letter to deliver to you by a Baroness Morpeth, who summoned him to her home in Northumberland. He was so terrified by what she showed him there that he rode through the night to get it here. You need to read it.
Terrified? Why should you be terrified, lad? Unless this woman of Northumberland is a secret factory manufacturing Spitfires and Hurricanes. I have no time or need of a correspondence, and neither should any member of His Majesty's army.
Please, sir, she ain't no ordinary woman. Something about her, sir, don't know how to describe it, but she's terrible, sir, she is.
Prime Minister Winston, just read it.
Oh, very well. Hand it here. Fifth of June, 1940. Dear Prime Minister, That this letter has reached your desk.
Your desk means that its bearer has convinced your senior staff of certain foundational truths about me and those I represent. So I know I have the benefit of your attention. Let me not waste it. My people can help you secure a victory over Hitler and the rest, decisively and swiftly. All that you want for weapons, soldiers, intelligence, we can supply in quantities and with such strength as will overwhelm the Axis powers. Who are we, you will ask? Your world has many words for us. We have visited you before and done deals with Faust and with Eve before him. Do you, dear Prime Minister, have what it takes? Will you dare to do what must be done and secure the future of your race by sitting down with that which you have been taught to fear and despise? Our terms will be substantive, onerous, but not unreasonable. We will win your war for you, and you will pay our price. Will you meet? Lady Sylvia Vivian,
Baroness of Castel Morpus. Roberts?
Yes, sir.
Tell me of this lady. Calmly now, lad.
I don't know what she was, sir. One minute she was a nice, ordinary lady, quite attractive, in fact, and another it was like her shadow wasn't her shadow. She touched my arm, sir, and it was like my skin wanted to run away from my body. And then, sir...
Yes?
She got inside my head, sir.
Your head looks fine to me, soldier. Quite intact.
No, sir. I mean, she knew things. Things that I never told nobody. Things I only ever thought to myself. I can't close my eyes anymore, sir. I don't dare it.
All right, soldier. Dismissed. You vouch for this man, Brookie?
I do, Prime Minister. Roberts carried my bag for 3 years. He's stolid, unimaginative, salt of the earth, last man to make things up. Whatever this woman showed him... Well, she's quite ruined him, as you can see. He's no use at all now. Shall I leave it with you, sir? Sir?
Hmm? What? Yes. Yes. A fresh letter, Lizzie, on personal paper. Baroness, your letter did reach my desk and did get my attention. So, yes, I will accede to a meeting, but I warn you, Baroness, you will not find me a pleasant interlocutor if you waste my time. Yours, etc. Get it to her at once. And Lizzie?
Yes, sir?
No copies of this one. No record in the log. You run it down yourself, understood? Have Henry drive you and take a couple of the lads. But I want a full report of the good Baroness.
Yes, sir. Sir?
Hmm?
You don't believe in demons and such like, do you, sir?
I don't believe in the insubstantial, Liz. You know that. But in this, England's hour of profound need... I bend knee to a rock. I prostrate myself before one of Clemmy's bloody Komodo lizards if I thought the thing could help deliver us from Mr. Hitler. Get along now. The time to act is now.
Will you take tea, Prime Minister? Or would you prefer something stronger? You typically take brandy at this hour, yes?
I take brandy at most hours. But, Baroness, I confess myself disappointed.
How so?
We're meeting at a crypt at midnight, and your tea service includes a horned skull.
Your point?
You appear to have collected every cliché and every furnishing of the fantastical. This is not the way to persuade me, whatever its effect on lesser men.
The crypt is a useful precaution in case of air raids. The time is congenial both to my kind and to your nocturnal habits. The skull... Well, you brought your advisors, and I brought mine.
Good evening, Prime Minister.
The bloody thing speaks!
I think I will, after all, have a little brandy.
Excellent.
So, here I am. Sipping brandy with a woman who proffers herself as an immortal demon possessing a human's body.
Demon is a human word of vague import and unhelpful connotations. We call ourselves the Shaitan Ansge, the Hundred Tribes. And as for possession, I made my bargain with Lady Vivian in 1893. You may speak to her if you wish. She's still in here with me. But of late, she sleeps a lot.
It is hard for me to verify any of these details, madam. But it would be a simple matter for me to test your claim of immortality.
By having one of your fine young men shoot me with his rifle.
More likely his service pistol.
Indeed. I should consider that a serious breach of protocol.
What protocol would you say applies to this situation?
That which pertains to a head of government receiving a friendly head of state in a time of war. We may leave this meeting allies, or we may leave enemies, Prime Minister, but we will both leave under safe passage.
And enough of the dance. I have a government to run, and a war to win. Your letters made claims and promises. Either substantiate them or bugger off.
You certainly have a way with words. Your field marshal, he has a wireless with him, I assume, to keep in contact with your battle commanders?
Rookie?
Of course, in the car.
Viscount Allenbrook, would you be so good as to return to your car and get the captain of the HMS Brazen on the line?
I am the Chief of the Imperial General Staff, Chairman of the Chiefs of Staff Committee. I am not your telephone operator. And madam, what do you know of the Brazen anyway?
The HMS Brazen, having recently struck some submerged wreckage, is currently en route to Harwich, where it is due for repairs. Those repairs will be extensive and expensive. The poor thing is barely a warship anymore. It cries to rest.
That is all classified. How do you...
Brazen is captained by Sir Michael Coombe Seymour, 5th Baronet. Sir Michael, like his father before him and his father's father, is the epitome of the values of the Royal Navy. Fortitude, good judgment, valor under fire. Though as his father was Second Sea Lord and his grandfather was Vice Admiral, it might be said that the current Sir Michael is something of a disappointment. Your Prime Minister has asked for a demonstration of our capabilities. We would prefer to provide one with minimal casualties, and certainly without killing a 5th Baronet from an august naval dynasty.
Brookie, get the captain on the line.
What should I tell him?
Tell him to abandon ship.
Get me calm, Seymour, Commander of the Brazen. This is Brooke. Michael, can you hear me? Michael, we have some information. You are about to come under attack.
Appreciate the warning, sir, but I'm afraid we are already under attack, and a pretty catastrophic one at that. The Brazen is lost, sir, but on the bright side, we should be able to get everyone off all right.
What is it, Michael? What is attacking the ship? One of their infernal U-boats?
That's the damnedest thing, sir. The sea was clear until mere minutes ago when out of the deep came a sort of thing.
Thing?
What kind of bloody thing?
And the truth is, sir, I don't know what the thing is. It appears to be some sort of marine creature, but not one I've ever seen before, unless you count it in storybooks.
Captain, you have to come now, sir.
Sir, Sir, it appears to be my turn, so if there's nothing else at this time, it's just that I shouldn't keep the men waiting.
Go! For God's sake, man, go!
Madam?
Prime Minister?
Would you keep me company for a turn around the cemetery? I am motivated to smoke and walk.
I am myself most partial to evening walks.
So, the creature was one of yours?
Ulescu is one of the oldest and most powerful of the Shaitan. It takes a very old, very subtle mind to merge with a Kraken. Even so, he'll have a horrible hangover in the morning. All those arms. Terribly hard to keep track of them all.
I don't understand.
The Shaitan need bodies to inhabit. In our native form, we are non-corporeal. We are beings of energy, not flesh, so we cannot walk in your world without a willing host. Ideally, and normally, those hosts are human. But they can be other intelligent species. I have 1,000 ready to cross over as soon as volunteers are ready to...
Volunteers?
The binding must be consensual to take, otherwise both parties risk death or worse.
We are talking of demonic possession. Very well. Let us talk of it. You would have me find soldiers willing to sell their souls, to subjugate themselves, to have your demons eat them from the inside and walk in their skins. My men are loyal and patriots, but that is more than any commander should ask of them.
Your metaphor is striking but inaccurate. There are many advantages to a human to have one of us on board. Freedom from illness and age, a sense of the infinite, and the power of our mystic energies flowing through their veins. It is a deal, to be sure, but so is a marriage. In the happiest cases, the two beings, human and Shaitan, merge. Their wants and desires align, their weaknesses burn away. In me, today, is everything that was best about the Baroness of Castel Morpeth. Her ambition, her cunning, and her refusal to be confined to the space you men would make for her. But there is also much of me.
And who are you? The leader? Elected or born? A tribal chief or a queen?
I am Vivikos. It does not translate perfectly. Mother of the 100 tribes is close. I was a creature of the first light, and I have striven patient eons to unite my people. The Shaitan are not naturally given to collaboration. I will do anything to save them. Is that not a mother's duty?
Save them from what?
You have finally asked the right question.
Well then?
If I demand trust, I must offer it. Our world is dying. We exist on the wrong end of the entropy curve. It is a barren place. No food, no light, no life.
It sounds hellish.
It is where your concept of hell comes from. We need a new world in which to live. A new land in which to root. We will win you that war, and in return you will open your borders to us, give us free movement into your world. That is our price. All we look for is some living space.
Living space? That is where Hitler started also, Lebensraum. That is a concept that will gain you little traction with me. One of you just stopped a battlecruiser. If I am to give 1,000 of you safe passage, what assurances do I have that when the war is done, you won't just turn on us, become an enemy even greater than the Nazis? Why would you stop at a little space when you could take the world?
So speaks the imperialist. It is the British Empire, Winston, not mine or Herr Hitler's, on which the sun never sets. India, Africa, Singapore, and the Malayas, the islands and archipelagos sparkling in the seven seas, dominions, protectorates, mandates, territories and colonies the globe over. This acquisitive streak is a uniquely human attribute. The Shaitan are not motivated by conquest or dominion. Do not ascribe your petty ambitions to us. I ask for what I ask for, no more, no less. Open your borders and let us in. Give safe haven to my people, in return for which we will save your world.
I will need to think on this. We will meet again. But first, I need to see for myself. Show me. Show me what you truly are and what you can do.
Really, Winston? Are we back to not trusting each other? Was one lost battleship insufficient evidence?
I believe your people have power. But if I am to ask my men, 1,000 troops, to allow your demon warriors inside them, then I must be prepared to risk it myself. Come then. I consent. Temporarily, you understand. Just for a moment. Let me experience some fraction of this power of which you boast. I consent. Let me be your vessel.
Why, Winston? How forward of you. Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill, son of Randolph and the American Jenny, husband of Clementine, leader of his nation and inspiration to the free world, will you submit your will to mine? Will you open yourself to my energies and let our souls be wed? Winston, will you let me in?
Yes.
Second anniversary of the declaration of war, the British Army crossed into Belgium. With their U-boat fleet sitting at the bottom of the ocean, their once feared Luftwaffe scared from the skies, and their terrible tank divisions ripped to shreds, the Germans feel the twist of fortune. Overlords yesterday, captives today. This remarkable change in circumstances, from near certain defeat to victory assured, has happened in less than 2 years, and represents both the redoubtable determination of the Allied troops, as well as the controversial Operation Chimera, a partnership with the demon race, who emerged from the shadows and reached out to Allied leadership only 2 short years ago, with the prospect of offering their support to our lost cause. The hero of the hour, indeed the essential man of the century, Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who conceived of Operation Chimera, negotiated the deal with the Shaitan Queen, Vivekos, and sold it to a skeptical public.
And I say to you, I would make common cause with the devil himself. Amicus meus, inimicus inimici mei. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And it matters not a whit if that friend has horns, or forked tongue, or wings. If he has wings, so much the better. We can use them in the air, where they can give us much-needed dominion over the dangerous Luftwaffe.
Last night, at a ceremony at Buckingham Palace, His Majesty the King presented every surviving member of Operation Chimera with the Victoria Cross for Valor in Combat.
Come.
It's the Baroness, sir.
Ah. Well, bring her in, Lizzie, and then you can slip away for the evening.
Sir, you don't want a note taken?
No. No man likes a record of his own falsity. Slip away, little Lizzie. Slip away.
Lady Vivian, Prime Minister.
My good Baroness, would you join me in champagne?
Oh, we are celebrating.
I have it most days with lunch. But yes, we are celebrating.
The outcome you sought is upon you.
You delivered all you promised. The valiant collaboration of our peoples has brought us to this conclusion. From a fight for our very survival, we have emerged victorious.
And many lives have been saved.
Indeed, an added blessing. More champagne.
I did not help you for champagne.
Indeed, you have come for your reward.
For our payment. The sacrifice of war has been heavy for both our peoples, human and Shaitan. For our part, we kept our word. We know you will keep yours. We have earned together the mutual respect of comrades, and we will need to call on that reserve of trust in the years to come. What is this?
Gibraltar. The island of Gibraltar. Located to the foot of the Iberian Peninsula. Wonderful climate, I'm told. Easily defensible. Open seas and skies for the less land-bound of your peoples. It is small, I grant you, perhaps 3 square miles. But organize it well, and you will have space for a good 10,000, perhaps more. You will be left alone. An island nation affords privacy. Lebensraum, just as you asked.
A Spanish island.
A British island, but no longer. It will be a Shaitan island.
Prime Minister, forgive me, but I believe you are laboring under a misapprehension.
You want more? Gibraltar too meager for your needs. Very well, lady, you drive a hard bargain. Let it never be said a British Prime Minister did not pay his debts. If Gibraltar is not enough for you, what of Bermuda, the Bahamas, Antigua, Anguilla? There must be something here that appeals.
Stop! We do not want an island. We do not want a territory where you can contain us and control us. We will not be hemmed in. We saved your world in exchange for free movement into it. That was our bargain.
Madam, you ask for living space, for a land of your own. That was our bargain.
We asked for free passage. We asked to share your world, your cities, your green and pleasant land. We would walk among you as fellow citizens, as people of common needs and shared sacrifice, as brothers and sisters. A broadening and a deepening of what it means to be a person in this reborn world.
You wish to move here, to England? You would seek to live here, on the streets of London, the moors of Yorkshire and the beaches of Brighton? Out of the question. Impossible.
Why?
You ask me for reasons against a proposition impossible. Surely the reasons are obvious. We are different. Your people are different, and many of them dangerous.
You have made use of our danger.
In time of war, of course, as weapons. Not in peace, as neighbors. I had never imagined that to be a request. I assumed you wanted your own territory, your own homeland, as with the Jewish people. On which question, I am in full support. But, madam, come, be reasonable. Why would you want to live alongside us when you could have a paradise all of your own?
We have had millennia alone. We called it a paradise at first. Then we called it something else.
Shaitan and human. We are of different races, different in kind. A Shaitan could no more be at home in Wimbledon than a Hindu fakir or a Cameroonian cattle herd.
Yet the Indian and the African also fought your war for you. Yet there are Englishmen ruling their lands, and despite promises, they cannot set foot in your kingdom. You mentioned the Jewish question. Do you remember what you said to the Palestinian World Commission in 1937?
I do not.
You don't remember those words?
I give a great many speeches.
Indeed. But perhaps that is your great fear of a stronger race, a more accomplished race, if I may put it that way, doing to you precisely what you have done to others, turfing you out of your mangy manger like a dog. Perhaps you fear if we walk amongst you, we will replace you. And perhaps you know that if we do, you should have no recourse, no one to complain to any more than the Indian or the Aborigine.
Come.
Prime Minister, Baroness.
Ah, Bruggy, you are just in time. The good lady and I were on the brink of a disagreement. Is it done?
It is done.
Show her.
Show me what? What have you done?
As of 0700 hours today, all surviving 783 members of Operation Chimera are secured on board the aircraft carrier HMS Unicorn, having been invited on board for a celebration after the ceremony at Buck's house. The HMS Unicorn is at a classified location deep in the Atlantic Ocean, far from any populated settlements. In addition to a skeleton crew and the Chimera volunteers, the Unicorn has one other passenger, one supplied by our American allies.
Franklin, you see, has been somewhat stressed out, in his phrase, by the prospect of the United States of America not being Great Britain's only superpowered ally.
What have you done?
The other passenger on the ship has the code name Little Boy, and it is something that the Yanks have been working on through the war. A nuclear fission device capable of... Well, let's just say that Dresden would look like a tea party compared to what Little Boy would do if it were detonated.
And the detonator?
Here.
They are your men as much as mine. They are twice the souls on that boat as there are bodies.
Good men all, I would not lose one more than I have already. But my lady, you must see, we could not permit even a few hundred of your remarkable race to wander free in peacetime.
In war, resolution. In defeat, defiance. In victory, magnanimity. In peace, goodwill.
Precisely. But at this particular moment, we are, I'm afraid, not yet fully at peace.
Bermuda, then. And the surrounding islands.
I fear Bermuda is off the table. We have taken the liberty of preparing Gibraltar for you. It really is very pleasant, and is now surrounded by a flotilla armed with little boys. You have a new home, where you will stay.
And what of free passage? What of the rest of my people?
Oh, there will have to be a system, of course. There's some sort of annual quota. Perhaps points-based, depending on our needs and the number of available volunteers. But these details, I am confident we can arrive at together, now that the bigger picture is agreed upon. We are agreed, Baroness. Are we not? We will be reasonable.
You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth.
I am no tiger, Baroness. A dog, perhaps. A pug. A little pug. But a resolute one when it comes to the safety of my people.
Your people, yes. But it is in the definition of who those people are that the trouble with your resolute nature sits. Tell me, Winston, did you ever stop to ask yourself why the majority of the volunteers for Operation Chimera came not from Britain itself, but from your colonies? Why almost all of them are Indian or African or islanders?
I took the best tools available to me to do my duty and keep my country safe. The best tools from wherever they presented themselves. I would do it all again.
No doubt. Would it surprise you to know you were not my first choice?
What?
You must realize the petty politics of humankind mean little to us. We had a simple objective, a deal to do. Why would I first approach the losing side? Surely it would have been more logical for us to go to the side that was winning, to Hitler, and offer our services there.
Well, did you?
Yes.
And?
He rejected me. Out of hand. So confident was he of victory that he did not want it tainted by contact with an impure demon race. So I came to you. I should have looked closer at British imperial history, perhaps, to realize your own attitudes were not so different to those of your enemy. That was my mistake. But this is yours.
I fail to see what mistakes I have made, my good lady.
Yes, yes, you do. But that's the point, is it not? You see, cage us as you will, and you will find who overcomes by force hath overcome but half his foe.
Come, madam. We may campaign in poetry, but our treaties are in stolid, dependable prose. Sign here. Champagne.
Our better part remains to work in close design by fraud or guile what force effected not, that he no less at length from us may find who overcomes by force hath overcome but half his foe.
This has been an Audible original based on the graphic novel Darkness Visible by Mike Carey and Arvind Ethan David. Produced by Prodigal Inc. Written and directed by Arvind Ethan David. Performed by Christian McKay as Winston Churchill. Miranda Richardson as Lady Sylvia Vivian Baroness Morpeth. Adam Campbell as General Alan Francis Brooke. Samuel Barnett as Roberts, Armand, and Sir Michael Coombe Seymour. Kirsty Yates as Lizzie, and Joe Spano as The Skull. Audible Executive Producer, Steve Feldberg. Produced by Arvind Ethan David and Brittany Chapman Holman. The production was engineered by Jose Perez and Go East Studios, London. Edited, mixed, and mastered, live sound effects, sound design, and composition by Go East Studios, London. Music, courtesy of APM. Dialogue edit, Hamid Rahim. Dramaturgical services provided by Whitney Mosery. Casting by Venus Kanani Casting. Writer's assistant, Izzy Kava. Production assistants, Nini Baresi and Georgia Callowards. Special thanks to Alice Hewer, Jen Ferrari, Jen Keough, and Connor Cole Jackson. Head of Audible Studios, Zola Mashariki. Chief Content Officer, Rachel Giazza. Copyright 2024 by Prodigal Inc. Sound recording copyright 2024 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.